Blog Talk Radio.
That I don't like is when you have to leave somebody that you care for a great deal and leave home and go out on the road. And I wrote a song about that. This was about 6 years ago, I guess. And I'd like to do it for you. It's called Leaving on a Jet Plane.
On my back to back, I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye, but the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. The taxi's waiting, he's blown the horn. Already I'm so lonesome I could die.
Jim Hart?
It's that time again, folks. The radio voice of Eastern Airlines is on the air. This is our 222nd radio broadcast. Wow, can you imagine? That's over 4 years with you every Monday at this time. And we are very glad that you're with us tonight. This must mean that you, our listeners, enjoy talking about Eastern Airlines. And it certainly means that we, your host, also enjoy talking about Eastern, both old and new. Our only purpose is to bring you news of Eastern, both past and present. You may also hear a song or two selected by our producer, which has enjoyed popularity during our days with Eastern. The legacy of Eastern is carried forward by people like you tuning in each week to share those memories. The regulars on the show each week try to do exactly that, sharing their own memories. Bill, how about telling our listeners how they can call in and take part in being a part of the voice of Eastern Airlines on the radio show?
Well, I miss Bill tonight, but certainly, Jim, for those listening to the broadcast on their computers, all you need to do is call us at 213-816-1611, and it will put you on my producer's board for telling us what's on your mind or adding to the subjects that we're discussing on the radio show. Remember, unless I've opened your phone connection to join the live conversation, you'll need to press the number 1 on your phone's keypad to join in. And for those who cannot listen in on a computer, you can still hear us and participate by just calling the number you just heard. That's 213-816-1611. Remember, for those wanting to listen to our show every Monday at 7 p.m. You can connect by going to EALRadioshow.com, or you can also connect with the show at our sponsor's website, www.REPA Online, Retired Eastern Pilots Association. That's REPAOnline.com. That's the site of the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. Let me repeat the phone numbers again. That's 213-816-1611. And also, as a reminder, at the end of each of our shows, we usually have time remaining for Eastern music, or that is the music we grew up with while working at Eastern. At the each end of the broadcast of each show, we will feature a different recording artist that we will all recognize. We're old enough to remember some of these, most all of them, recording artists. We hope you'll stick around after the sign-off music has been played for this part of the radio show. And we'll be featuring a recording star at each broadcast, a different star. So we've got some good stuff at the end of the show. Even though we've signed off our broadcast, we do have this music available. So we hope you'll listen to it. Tonight, we enjoy the songs that you just heard by Henry John Duchendorf, Jr. Bet you don't know who we're talking about. Well, you heard the song, so you know that he is known. John Duchendorf is known professionally as John Denver. He was an American singer, songwriter, actor, activist, and humanitarian whose greatest commercial success was as a solo singer starting in the 1970s. He was one of the most popular acoustic artists of the decade and one of its best-selling artists. By 1974, he was firmly established as America's best-selling performer. And AllMusic has described Denver as among the most beloved entertainers of his era. After traveling and living in numerous locations while growing up in his military family, Denver began his music career in folk music groups in the late 1960s. Throughout his life, Denver recorded and released approximately 300 songs, about 200 of which he himself composed, with total sales of over 33 million. John Denver was an avid pilot, and he died in a single fatality crash of his own personal airplane, experimental aircraft, at the age of 53. Bill, are you with us? Oh, no. Well, in that case, I'm going to start this R2800, I guess, the ones that we used to have in the conveyors, in the Martins. We had the R2800 engine, so we're going to start that so we can officially start our program tonight, and I can see our board is completely lit up. So let's see if I can find
Neil.
Yes,
Neil.
Steve. Yes, Steve.
Hang on. Let me get a fire bottle because there's no one out there to man the fire bottle. I'll go ahead and get that and stand outside.
Why did they have to do that, Steve? Do you recall?
Well, because there is so much flame coming from these engines that, and our maintenance is a little suspect on it because Chuck is neglects our piston engine in favor of the turbine engine.
Can you imagine sitting on a 747 while its four engines are being crunk up? That's a Southern word, crunk.
Have you or 2,800 people ever looked at a jet engine at night and see the flames coming out the back of it?
Well, all the smoke, though, that those R2800s and 3350s and 4360s or whatever, all the smoke, that was the thrill of starting those engines. So here we go. Let's crank up our engine.
Be careful, Neil. I've got the glycol machine going.
Well, we're not in freezing weather yet, Jeff.
Neil?
Yes, John.
This is Don Gagnon. I believe...
Hey, Don. Good to hear from you, Don. How's Dorothy?
You too. I just got back from the villages. John Denver's father, Captain Disseldorf, held the high altitude record for a short period of time. I think he was an Air Force pilot, a test pilot.
Really?
He was an Air Force pilot. They were at Eglin Air Force Base in the mid-60s.
Yeah, been there, done that. Okay.
My golly, that's interesting. So that's his interest in aviation, John Denver's interest in aviation.
Neil, we're getting background noise.
I know it. I'm trying to filter that out. Let me give a...
Okay.
Let me give you a little thing about what we hear tonight on the radio show. Again, we're a kitchen table radio show. We don't have much funding. So therefore, we hope that everyone that has an open mic, which is everybody that's on my board, don't wait for the number one to be pressed. I just open up all the cell phones and whatever you're calling in on. I open it up so that you can just say whatever you want to say, especially tonight because we've got open mic. So whatever is on your mind, just blurt it out. We'll listen to it. Make comments if we care or dare, and so the forum is all yours tonight. But we would like for you to be very careful with what's around you. Doorbells, telephones ringing, dogs barking, babies crying. Well, great grandchildren crying anyhow. As ancient as we are. And so try to keep the noise level down as much as possible. We would appreciate it. All of us would appreciate it. And so with that being said, it's always great to start off our programs every Monday evening by saying hello to our host and our guest because we've got a board full of folks that listen in. Some of them just listen in on their cell phones without making any comments. But we know you're there because you're on my producer's board, and I can see your area code here. And so we're hoping that you will just say hello or just breathe heavily, and we'll know you're there. And we want to hear from you, whether it's by voice or by heavy breathing. We'll take that, too. Tonight we're breaking away from our normal introduction of all of our hosts by asking what the weather is. So just eliminate the weather. We know everywhere in the country is hot right now. So let's just say it's hot here with the exception of Jill and Steve and John. Well, I don't know about John. He's over there on the Atlantic coast. But at any rate, we had a couple of people bragging about what the temperature was in their area. But normally our hosts for our shows consist of Jim Hart. You heard at the beginning of our show, Bill Joseph. Didn't hear Bill Joseph speak up, so something must have happened to him out there in Colorado. And he lives in, golly, Pete, it's not Denver. But Grand Junction, golly, I knew it would come to me in a minute. And Grand Junction, where he lives in the summertime, and in the winter he is back in the Tampa St. Pete area. And let's see, from there we have our host up at New York. We usually have George Jen, who, by the way, is preparing a show for us on July 13th that you will all want to listen in on. It's going to be a great, great show. George, as you know, was the author of Final Destination, Disaster, and that is the fall of Eastern Airlines. And we have some special guests that were in that book, and hopefully they will be participating with us on that show. We'll be talking about some of the things that were not covered in the crash of Flight 980 in Bolivia. So it's going to be a great show, I think. And we'll learn a lot about that tragic accident of Eastern Airlines 727 crashing in Mount Iliani, I think it is. And let's see, anything else that I've missed? Yeah. No, I'm still talking about some of our hosts. We got them from all over the country, folks. Chuck Albright's down in the central part of Florida. And Don, you just left where he is from, and he's from the Villages. Hello, Chuck. How are you tonight?
We're doing just fine. It's going to be a great show.
Okay, Steve Thompson in North Carolina. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Neil, and hello, listeners and hosts. Beautiful day here in North Carolina. Thank you.
You're going to give us the temperature. That's all we need, Steve.
72 degrees with a light breeze. Eat it up.
Yeah, okay. And Cecile, you're way down in South Florida. How's it going down there in Fort Lauderdale area?
Oh, it's horribly hot. It's like in the 90s. I think the Chamber of Commerce is lying to us. It must be 100. So that's back to you, Neil.
Okay, yeah, it's been 100 yesterday and the day before here in Jacksonville, Florida. St. Augustine area, so it's hot in Florida. And then we have, way up in Martha's Vineyard, and he's our opening host, and Jim Hart. How are things on the vineyard, Martha's Vineyard?
Everything is fine today, Neil. I tell you, we've had the heat on in the house for the last few days, but today we're finally around 75 or 80 degrees. No humidity, and we just love it up here. I'm waiting for my big 5-pound lobster to come in very soon. And please enjoy this as best you can over the radio.
5-pound lobster.
You got it.
What do you mean when it comes in? What are you talking about? Your lobster comes in, Jim?
Well, the thing is that when the fishermen go out and they do some dragging with their nets, they catch these humongous lobsters. And, of course, they have to be careful that the lobster is not a female with eggs. And, of course, they have to throw them right back. But they've got some of the most fantastic. We've had lobsters 20, 25 pounds, but of course you're paying almost $2 a pound. When we have friends, guests up here, we like to put a 5-pound lobster on the table. Our dear friends who left us just last year to go back to San Diego, Woody Woodward and his wife Kathy, he's a dentist in San Diego, we celebrated his birthday with a 5-pound lobster in the middle of the table, and we had a ball.
Okay. Very good. Good report there, Jim. And let's see. We've got Jill Cotton in Asheville, North Carolina. How are things in the hills of the Blue Ridge Mountains?
Oh, everything's great. It's a little bit warmer than what Steve reported, but I'll tell you, sitting in the shade and the cool breezes feel awfully good.
All right.
Back to
and
you,
then.
Neil.
Okay, and back over to the east coast of South Carolina is John Reinhart. Hello, John.
Neil, how are you tonight? I have two of my closest friends here with me tonight, Joe and Sandra Poole, and we're sitting out on their deck in Litchfield, South Carolina, overlooking the Heron Marsh with the birds coming in. There's a beautiful breeze out here tonight. We're at about 88, 89 degrees, a little overcast. It had been much warmer today, up close to 100, but has cooled down considerably. We're on our second vodka and second bottle of wine, so we are thoroughly enjoying your show tonight.
Yeah, it'll get better as you drink more. John.
Yes, it does. And you just need to kind of speed things up here.
My kind of host. I'm glad this is not done in video. Okay, who have we got? Now, let's see. We've talked to Jill. Frank Sagnor, Frank hasn't been with us a long time. Frank, are you with us? And we have also that checks in just about every time is Al Jenkins up in Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, Al.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? It's hot, but we have a breeze.
Hotlanta. That's why they call it that, isn't it? Hotlanta.
And also that question you asked me about Atlanta Airport, we are, I just remembered, supposed to open up a international airport not far from Jackson.
Well, wait a minute. I haven't heard that news. Would you run that by us again?
Okay. They want to open up the airport north of Atlanta. For international flights. I don't know when they're going to do it, but I know they have scheduled for one flight, the first flight to come in, and I don't know what date it is.
Golly, is that Petrie DeKalb Airport?
No. No, but when I find out, I'll let everybody know.
I hope you do, because that's brand new news. Golly, Pete. I haven't heard that on ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox News. But interesting information there.
Okay.
Let's see. Who else have I missed? Have I missed anyone? George is gone. Jill, Frank, John. Gay, are you with us tonight?
I am. I am sitting down here in the middle of a thunderstorm. But it's cooling it off, so that's...
Wonderful. And that's in Hilton Head, South Carolina, right?
Right. We've moved. We're just right outside of Hilton Head now, but very close.
Okay. Very good. We had a convention there at Hilton Head about 3 years ago, and I really enjoyed it. A convention with the retired Eastern pilots.
All three of my kids grew up with my mom and dad, too, so it was great.
Okay. Very good. All right, Hilton Head, and we learned a little bit about Hilton Head Airport last show. That I bet you didn't even know that, did you, Gay?
I did not. That was something new. Now I want to go see the markers.
Cemetery marker on one of the runways. How apropos that would be. Yeah, especially the captain on the before takeoff saying. Folks, on the right-hand side of the airplane, if you look out to the right, you'll see the grave marker of so-and-so.
Exactly. Do not be alarmed.
Yeah, do not. Okay, very good. Well, let's see. I've just about run out of things to say about our host. And Jim Graybill, are you with us up in Atlanta? No. Jim's not with us. And, okay, I guess, Jim, I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Okay, I'm ready, Neil. I'd like to ask Cecile, because I know she's online right now. Cecile, how are things coming along with the plans for our proposed October flight on the new Eastern Airlines from Miami to San Juan? Do you have some news for us, please?
Yes, well, they're coming along. We're halfway there with the monies and the checks received. We still need the other half. And Vito has offered to send an e-blast to the ERA members. We're now opening it up to whoever wants to go. We had 250 people that were confirmed, but a lot of people had a change of plans or whatever. And I am going to personally call most of those people, but I'm waiting for Ed Weigel to respond to the specific date, which we requested October 16th. And Ed did email me back on Sunday, two Sundays ago, that there would be a slight increase in the airfare. I don't think it'll be much, but we still need to know what it is, and we need to confirm the date with Ed. I also called his office this afternoon around 4. He was on a conference call, and Patty, his secretary, said he didn't think he would be back with in touch with us today because I told him that we needed to do an update on the radio. So I'm waiting for his response, and when I get that, when we solidify the date and the actual cost, we will re-e-blast everybody. Then we're going to send an email. Vito's going to send an email to all EARA members, which there's thousands, and the plane should be filled. But I can't do it without Ed's comments and what it's going to be. So that's what we're waiting on, Jim.
Yes, Cecile, I think that we remembered when we met with Ed and the whole group in Miami when we introduced the new company that Ed Weigel's mother was an avid listener to our program. And perhaps if she's talking to Ed, she might just mention that we're waiting to hear from him. It's fantastic. We're all just on pins and needles waiting to hear exactly what's going to happen in October. Back to you, Neil.
Okay, just one other comment, Jim. Yeah, thank you, Jim. That's a great idea. Even though it's October and it's 4 months away, a lot of the passengers are flight attendants or people that are still working. So I have one flight attendant, Susan, that put in 3 times for a request for a vacation, with the potential dates, and they can't just keep changing the dates. So a lot of people are still employed, so that's why we need to set this up now, even though we're 4 months ago away from the departure date, hopefully. Back to you, Neil. Neil, back to you.
Oh, you gave it back to me? Oh, okay.
I gave it back to you. I just want to thank everybody who sent in the money, and especially Isabel, who has 5 people going with her. So
right.
Thank you very much.
Golly, I wish that's a word from the past, isn't it? Golly. Gosh, I should say. We have our board full of listeners that are listening on their cell phones. And again, a reminder that you can listen to us on EAL Radio Show and or either REPA, REPA, online.com. And a lot of people are confused or either email me saying that they can't listen to the show. They don't know how to get into it. And if you go to either one of those sites, then perhaps it's easier to go to REPA Online. And there you will see a beautiful website that is the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. And if you know of any of the, if you knew some of the pilots with Eastern, or any pilot with Eastern, there's a great history of the Pilots Association, and also a complete record of all of the pilots ever with Eastern Airlines back in the 20s all the way up to this date. Those that have passed and flown west, and you might want to go through that list and see if you can remember any of those. They have a great website there. They have a convention coming up in Alabama. It's going to be in Fairhope. I remember back in the early 2000s, they had a convention there. I was the director of REPA at that time and the editor of the Repartee magazine. And they had a wonderful convention there in Fairhope, Alabama. They have one this year again. And so we'll be telling you more about that as we get closer to that date. But you can go to either one of those sites, and you'll see a radio icon or a little icon that has the radio show. And you can tap the little circle with the arrow in it. And especially after 7 o'clock, you'll be live with us on the radio show. and listening to us either on the computer or either if you don't have a computer, you can call in like so many on my board right now have chosen to do, and we hear a lot of background noise as well. That's kind of entertaining. But at any rate, you can listen either way on your cell phone by calling 213-816-1611. Toll-free, we have a toll-free number, but it seems like everybody gets on that first and hardly any time at all available on that. But if by chance you want to go to 877-572-1861, that's 877-572-1861. You can also listen to us on that telephone number. Or either, again, on your computer. That's the easy way of doing it. And then if you want to pick up any of our past broadcasts, you can always go to either of those sites, Repo Online or EALRadioshow.com, and you can listen to any of our archive shows that now this is the 222nd show that will be in the archives, and you can listen to any of the shows previous. So that's all that I have on the radio show, how to get to us and how to talk with us. And anyone out there would like to say hello?
Neil, Jim Grebel, get to me there?
Yeah, I can hear you. Jim, welcome.
Okay. I think you're talking about that international airport thing. I live right out here by Macomb, and we heard the other day that they've installed the inspectors and everything for international. So that may be the one that they were talking about. I'm not sure.
What do you mean when you say international?
Well,
just told us a little bit about it.
They have customs there now, Neil.
Okay, customs. So does this mean that the Atlanta Hartsfield Jackson Airport is just saturated with flights coming in from around the world, and they have to use another alternate airport?
Well, I don't know. The runway is not that long out here. I'm guessing that it's probably, Macomb is probably around 5,000 feet. But they had a big thing in the paper here the other day about the customs opening up at Macomb.
It's more for small business jet aircraft, Gulfstream, that type of operation then.
Yeah, I would guess that one now.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting, you know, the customs at another airport here in Atlanta, though.
Yeah. Okay. Peachtree DeKalb doesn't have customs.
Not that I know of.
Hmm.
No.
Well, no. Okay. I guess Mathis is out of the question up and coming, Georgia.
Mathis.
Yeah, I was.
Anybody ever been in there besides me?
I've been in there in a steerman, and I almost killed myself.
I was in there since I read. I had it one time, and runway's about as wide as the gear.
Yeah, we used to call Mathis and also Stone Mountain International Airport Stone Mountain. Or either Mark Britt International, right, Steve Thompson?
Yes, exactly.
Mark Britt International.
Where did Mark Britt go now after they closed
They closed Stone Mountain?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Got houses there now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know where they went. I don't know. Well, that's
Steve.
Yeah, Steve.
Yesterday was a very special day, and I think all of the fathers' lives, and I just would like to take this opportunity to tell everyone how blessed that I have been to have such wonderful children and grandchildren and a sister and a brother-in-law in my life. And God has blessed me beyond my deserving self.
Yeah.
And it was a very special day and so meaningful to me. So I just wanted to take that opportunity to mention that. Thank you.
Happened
here,
to me,
babe.
Yeah. Who's that?
Thank you, Steve.
John.
You're welcome,
John
Johnny.
John Reinhart, how many children do you have, John?
I have 3 sons and 8 grandchildren.
Wow. Very good. My 2, I only have 2, a boy and a girl, one in Mobile, Alabama, and the other one in San Francisco area, both called and wished me a happy Father's Day, and they have been the blessing of my life, of course my wife also, but I got to call my daughter's especially husband and wished him happy Father's Day to my 3 grandchildren. So it's wonderful talking with them on that special day, and I'm sure all of the fathers out there enjoyed hearing from their children.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, that is a very special day, Neil. I have 3 children and 5 grandchildren and 1 great-granddaughter. So.
Wow. You're really getting up there in age, Jim.
Amen on that one, buddy.
Neil, this is Jim.
Jim Hart, go ahead.
The thing I wanted to mention was going back to my very first days with Eastern Airlines in Hartford, Springfield. We were in a hangar selling tickets while we sat on orange crates, and people today would not understand this. We only had propeller-driven aircraft, Martin 404s, Convair 440s. Then along came the DC-7, the Super Connie. Wow, those were wonderful, wonderful days. And people did not worry at all. They would come out to the ramp. We had umbrellas, if it was raining, to give them to walk from the ramp to the airplane. We didn't have these newfangled, rampways that takes you from the terminal to the airplane. But there are so many things that have changed since those days. And only those people who, like us, were there then can remember the days when people, when they flew, actually flew and wearing a suit and a tie and nice shoes. And the ladies wore very, very nice dresses and so on. And unfortunately, that's not the case today. Things have changed.
Another comment?
Hey, what, Neil?
I think someone else was about to make a comment. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Jim Grebel. I think the bus station has moved to the airport.
Yeah. You know when that happened, Jim Grebel?
Yeah.
On the Eastern Airlines Moonlight Special.
That's exactly right.
All of the Greyhound bus people went to Eastern Airlines Moonlight Special. Believe me. You've never seen such
cheaper.
A crowd. Yeah, and the people. Well, I remember I used to fly those flights, and I was in Houston one time, and I went out to the lobby, and they were completely full. And I told the gate agent, I said, well, this one doesn't go, this one doesn't go, this one doesn't go. And they were sacked out on the floor. They didn't have a shirt on or anything. I mean, these were really cattle-class people. Jill, I'm sure you did. You ever fly a Moonlight Special, Jill Cotton? I might have her turned off here. I think she said she had to leave early. Gay, I know flying for Delta, you didn't fly anything like that, did you?
I'm not sure what it was. Was it the all-night flight?
Yeah, didn't your dad tell you about the Moonlight Special?
I don't think so. I did my share when I was based on the West Coast. I did mostly all-nighters back to the East Coast, and we would get all the crazy people out when it was a full moon. You knew if it was a full moon, you were flying an all-nighter, it would be definitely entertaining, for sure.
Well, the moon part is right. That's why Easterns call it the Moonlight Special.
Oh, I many a trip I flew all night like that. Crazy people.
There were so many various flights that we had back in those days. I remembered out of Hartford, Springfield, we had they call it a TN flight, $39 one way from Hartford to Miami. And we also had a number of very reduced flights going into San Juan. And, of course, in the Hartford-Springfield area, we had tobacco farms. We had thousands of tobacco farms, farmers, and they employed people from the islands. And I remember my first day on the ticket counter, a man came up, and on his ticket was Mr. J-E-S-U-S, Mr. Rodriguez. It was Mr. Jesus Rodriguez. And I said, "Mr. Jesus, it's nice to have you with us tonight." It was unbelievable, the things that happened in those days. But it was wonderful because that was the beginning of real aviation, and I'm so pleased to have been a part of it, you know, as we all have been.
Yeah, yeah, true. Very good. Jesus, I think it's the way you pronounce it in Spanish.
That's right.
Some of those all-night flights from Kennedy to San Juan were kind of interesting, too.
From where?
From Kennedy down to San Juan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember I flew a trip from San Juan, my first qualifying on Omega. No, it was Loran. Loran. That's not Lorraine. That's Loran. L-O-R-A-N. Loran. And we used to have a CR2 tube and a CRT tube. Is that right, CRT? Tube.
Yes.
That would look like an ignition analyzer on a Constellation. And it was the way that you lined up things and looked at the chart to see if you were navigating the right way all the way to Boston. And I was flying a trip with my first check captain in the right seat. Was checking me out on Loran, long range from San Juan to Boston. And I had no idea what the hell I was doing. I had no idea, no clue. And the check captain was Stan somebody. I can't remember Stan's last name. Redheaded guy. And a real nice guy. And he knew I didn't know what I was doing. But he was in the right seat, and he was looking at the CRTs and the Loran tube there, and I said, "Yeah, that's right, that's right." Yeah, I kept saying "right." You know, he said, "This is where we are." That's right. Yeah, yeah. So we came within a reasonable accuracy of getting—I forgot what that check mark checkpoint was—getting into Boston. And he signed me off, but he didn't know what the heck he was signing me off for because I had no clue about how to navigate Loran. Anyone, Steve, did you have any problems with Loran? You were a smart guy.
Oh, yes. We were
I was based, I believe, in New York, and I was a second officer, or otherwise referred to as an engineer. And I'm talking over somebody, and I don't know who or why.
No,
or
go ahead. I think I found the one.
Okay. At any rate, I was flying engineer on a DC-7, and it was the first time back from a work stoppage by some labor group, and I think it was the engineers. And it was a charter flight from Kennedy to,
Bermuda.
Bermuda. You've heard this story before.
Yes, I have.
Yes, okay.
Well,
anyway,
tell us,
maybe
Steve.
Somebody on here who hasn't heard it.
No, go ahead.
I haven't heard it. I had
no clue as to how to operate the Loran. And it was my responsibility to do it, but then the screen and the scope and everything was on the right side. So everybody was aware of the fact that I had no clue as to how to operate this. But everybody agreed, well,
sir? I was on that flight.
You were?
Yeah.
Wow. Did you know how lost we were?
Yep.
So, at any rate, flight planned it, and we estimated each one of the checkpoints, and we were right on the minute for every checkpoint that we on our flight plan until the last one, and we are an hour early.
An hour early?
Yes.
You must have really been.
I got a question for Chuck. Chuck, do you remember when engine analyzers were first introduced?
Vaguely.
Vaguely.
He wasn't born yet.
Yeah, he wasn't born yet. Yeah.
Was it before 1941?
No. It was after that, but when you could find out which plugs were firing and which plugs were not, how to change the plugs without really an exhaustive search.
I know they had one of them on, I can't remember, one of the World War II bombers.
I'll
have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
What is the pilot's opinion of the Bermuda Triangle?
It's triangular shaped.
And it is dangerous.
Is it real?
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah, it's real.
Yeah, oh, yeah. We had a show on that one time. Amelia Earhart was there, and the squadron, the Lost Squadron, were there. And it was a live show.
Okay.
It was on Halloween.
You know, one of the theories is it's a large meteorite that is magnetized. I read an article about some guy come up with that idea. Now, what do you think about that? Guys getting lost, their compass is going bad, and they just run out of fuel.
I think that was one of the best shows we ever had on the EAL radio show. Was that Halloween flight? And
it was
Luann was with us. She was a senior flight attendant on that trip that we had. And L-1011 and Bermuda Center took over our airplane and landed us on this little small island that wasn't there. And there we met. Do you remember? You guys remember that show?
I remember it.
Yeah. It was a great show. I forgot what number it was, 79, or here we are, 222.
It had to be before,
huh?
To be before 79, because that's when I came in, around 79 or 80. So
yeah,
it had to be
before that, that's right.
How do you explain when the ships get confused because of the triangle? How do you explain that?
Well, he didn't go into that in the article. He was just talking about airplanes. But you got a good point.
Yeah.
They're not going to run out of gas.
That's right. They might run out of ocean.
Oh, that's true.
Well, you know, we talked a lot about Bermuda Triangle. We identified the 12 areas on the globe that had a similar area known as the atolls. Remember that atoll 1 through 12, I think. And I forgot which one the Bermuda Triangle was in that atoll. And weird things happen to airplanes flying in those areas, 12 areas around the world. Interesting show, I think we did a little bit of research on it, but mainly we just wanted to have fun on Halloween night, and it was a good show, as I recall. Is the show over?
Yeah, we're still here.
I'm Neil, Steve, I wasn't here last week, and I'm sorry, but talking about airports, and I noticed there was some conversation in here about difficult airports. Did anybody talk about the Quito airport last week?
No, would you talk to us?
And the La Paz airport?
No, would you talk about them?
Sure. Quito was one of the probably more difficult, of course, which is now is no longer serving Quito. And Cecile, are you here?
Yes, sir.
There is a new airport serving Quito, correct?
I don't know, and I should know that because that's where I was born.
That's what I think. But I have mentioned your name around there many times, and nobody knows anything about you. So, just kidding.
All right.
But anyway, the old airport that served Quito was probably one of the most difficult ones that I have flown to in and out of in my career. First of all, your approach altitude was, from memory, I believe it was 18,000 feet.
Oh,
it was from a VOR, which was on top of a mountain, which was on the north side of the airport. So you made your approach at 18,000 feet at minimum speed, which at that altitude was still a very fast speed, and then you started your letdown for an approach where you went down a valley and turned around a mountain and came back down a valley back toward the airport.
Are you making
And the airport was about 9,000 feet, as I remember. Yeah. And so the weather was always questionable here at this airport. And you would go down, the minimum, I believe, was somewhere around 1,000 feet. And you'd go down to, let down to 1,000 feet above the airport, which would be a little over 10,000 feet. And if you didn't see the airport at your minimum altitude, you'd make a go-around, and that go-around was into about a 16,000-foot mountain. And you had to make a right turn down a valley, climbing to a radio beacon. And once you reached that beacon, you would continue climbing down another valley to the left. And that was probably the most complex approach and go around that I have ever flown into.
Yeah.
Does anybody else remember that?
I'd have got lost.
I went from Guayaquil to Quito. I went on a pass to Guayaquil, and then I flew from Guayaquil to Quito. I don't know what the airline was, but I'll tell you, it was the most frightening experience because it was obviously a Ecuadorian airline, I believe, and they go to take off, and I put my arm on the armrest, and the armrest falls off.
And then the plane all of a sudden turns around and goes back to the gate. And having worked the gate, I knew what they were missing. They forgot to give them the weights. I go, oh, my gosh. So I started praying really good. And obviously I made it. But that was a frightening experience. And you're right, Steve, what you described when you're landing there. I was just praying. I was saying, I hope these pilots have the experience that our Eastern Airlines pilots have when they were landing there in Quito. But I figured they go back and forth so much they know it like the palm of their hand. So, but it was quite an experience.
Yeah. And you mentioned also La Paz, Steve.
Well, La Paz was to me a very easy airport to get in and out of. And it was a fun airport because you could, there was no speed restrictions, and you could do all sorts of legal flight maneuvers at all sorts of any speed that you wanted to. That was safe. And the runway was about 15,000 feet, or was that the altitude? No, the altitude was about 13,000 feet, and the runway was, I think, 15,000 feet. So it was a fun approach to me, even though I was only in there for about three or four times. And usually I was a co-pilot. I was a check airman, checking somebody else in there, checking someone out who was in there for their first time, even though I had only been in there once or twice. But it was a fun airport to fly in and out of.
Earlier in our career, back in the 50s and 60s, we had approaches that we had to demonstrate to the FAA before we got our airline transport pilot's rating that we could make proficiently and accurately to the standards of the FAA. And one of those approaches, you remember, Jim Graybill and Steve and any pilot listening, was called the Canyon Approach. Do you remember that? The
yes.
Canyon Approach?
Yes.
To a minimum altitude, and from that point you carried, staggered in, or flew straight and level and maintained altitude to another point, and at that point you saw the runway or you went around. I think that was the procedure. Anyone remember that?
Yes, I do.
My question is where did you find a canyon in Florida?
I know. That was always puzzling to me. I wondered which canyon am I supposed to be demonstrating this proficiency? And never figured that one out. But it was kind of interesting to demonstrate in the duplicators and even up to the days of the 727. As I recall, we were still doing canyon approaches. Maybe I stand to be corrected. Maybe it went out with the reciprocating engine days. But it was a unique type of an approach and interesting, and sounded like what you would make at Quito, although I've never been in there except in a simulator, in a Delta simulator. And But I'm trying to think of which airport and on the Eastern system would you have to demonstrate a canyon approach. But it was in the days of the non-precision approach categories. The precision approach categories were ILS and above. And then the non-precisions were, I think, the ADFs, I should say. The ADFs and the VOR and the back course approaches and all were considered to be non-precision approaches. But that's the way we used to train pilots in the old days. I don't know whether that training is alive today in any respect. It seems like today the pilots are trained to push this button, and if that doesn't work, then push this button. But not to fly the airplane hands on. That's my opinion.
Well, when they pushed the button and it didn't work, then they called tech service.
Yeah. And meanwhile,
I worked tech service for 5 years.
And meanwhile, they landed short of the runway in San Francisco. A couple of announcements I think want to make right now is, golly, I'm getting a pretty good feedback. Yeah, there you go. That sounds better. Whoever that was. July 13th, I want you to put that on your calendar because you'll want to listen to a show about Eastern Flight 980. And we have special guests to give us a better and a more factual accounting of this tragic crash in Bolivia that still, to this day, has not been completely investigated by our own government. Please tell your friends about the show, July 13th, and if you have any questions for our special guest, please bring them to the broadcast. George Jenn, the author of Final Destination Disaster, What Really Happened to Eastern Airlines, will be one of our guests. And we have two guests that actually made the trek up the mountain, Mount Illiani, to see if they could find Flight 980 in Bolivia. And you'll want to listen to that show, and we're hoping to get a couple of more guests that are specialists in air disasters. We've already had Christine. I can never pronounce her name, but she's on lots of the main television shows as a authority or an expert in a lot of these safety related accidents that she's going to, I hope we can get her on the show. She's already been on the show one time. So we want you to remember July 13th will be the date of that show. And we want you to listen to that, what really happened to Eastern Airlines, and especially as it relates to Eastern Flight 980. And as we mentioned at the beginning of our show and at the end of each show, we always have a few extra minutes of radio time left. So when we say goodnight to our listeners and the music of the Lawrence Welk edition of Goodnight, you might want to listen to a few extra minutes of music from our past. And as we mentioned earlier in the show tonight, that music will be the music and the guitar of John Denver, a wonderful folk singer and also aviator. Great show. At the end of our show, I don't know what we could call that, but extra minute show or something like that. Jim Hart?
Well, there's that music again, folks. Where does the time go? Well, it's our show for tonight, and we'll be back with you next week, same time, same station, www.ealradioshow.com. And like one of our popular Eastern commercials, we have to earn our wings every day. And we hope we're doing so here at the EAL Radio Show. Next week, we hope you once again fly Eastern Radio as we can bring you more Eastern news, history, and talk from former Eastern employees and friends of Eastern. Be sure to tune in and call in at 7 p.m. when flight number 223 departs the gate for a new adventure. Be on board for the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. From all of the gang here at our studio and remote locations, We all say all together now, good night,
good
Eastern
night.
Family.
Good night,
See
Eastern.
See you next week.
Good night, Neil.
Good night. Now, don't turn us off. Remember, we have a few great songs by John Denver starting right now.
He was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. He left yesterday behind him. You might say he was born again. You might say he found the key to every door.
Why is it staying in and out
here? When he first came to the mountains, his life was far away. On the road, hanging by a song. But the string's already broken, and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast, and it don't last for long. The Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. The shadow from the starlight is softer than a lullaby. Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado.
Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado.
He climbed the Cathedral Mountain. He saw silver clouds below. He saw everything as far as you can see. And they say that he got crazy once, and he tried to touch the sun, and he lost a friend but kept a memory. Now he walks in quiet solitude, the forests and the streams, seeking grace in every step he takes. His side is turned inside himself to try and understand the serenity of a clear blue mountain lake. And the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado.
Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado.
Now his life is full of wonder, but his heart is still a...
Heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is older, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home.
Mama,
Take Me Home, Country Roads, and it's a song written by John Denver and initially recorded by John Denver. It became one of Denver's most popular and beloved songs, and it's very popular today around the world. It's considered to be Denver's signature song. It also has a prominent status as an iconic symbol of West Virginia, which it describes as almost heaven. For example, it was played at the funeral memorial for United States Senator Robert Byrd. The popularity of the song has inspired resolutions in the West Virginia legislature to change the state song of West Virginia to Take Me Home, Country Roads. And on March 7, 2014, the West Virginia legislature approved a resolution to make Take Me Home, Country Roads the official state song of West Virginia.
Thank you very much. You know, it's a wonderful thing to be able to share yourself with people, and I find so much joy in writing songs that the best that I can do about that is to sing them for you. And what I would like you to know is that the best part of communicating with people and of sharing yourself with people is being able to share the way you feel about the first person in your life. This beautiful lady that I know who supports me and who gives me the strength to do the things that I want to do in my life. This is her song. One, two. You fill up my senses like a night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again. Come, let me love you, let me give my life to you. Let me drown in your laughter, let me die in your arms.
Song was written as an ode to Denver's wife at the time, Annie Martell Denver. Denver wrote this song in July of 1973, and it's about 10 and a half minutes it took him to do that song one day on a ski lift to the top of Ajax Mountains. Mountain in Aspen, Colorado. As a physical exhilaration of having just skied down a very difficult run and the feeling of total immersion in the beauty of the colors and sounds that filled all senses and inspired him to think about his wife. Annie Denver recalls the beginnings. It was written after John and I had gone through a pretty intense time together and things were pretty good for us. He left to go skiing, and he got on the Ajax chair on Aspen Mountain, and the song just came to him. He skied down and came home and wrote it down. Initially, it was a love song, and it was given to me through him, and yet for him, it became a bit like a prayer. The first time I heard Annie's song, I told John it had the same melody of Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, second movement, said Milt Oakham. He walked over to the piano, sat for an hour, and he came back. And the only thing remaining from Tchaikovsky was the first five notes. It was fantastic. Here's another John Denver song. See if you remember.
Taught me to sing a love song, showed me how to laugh and how to cry. It introduced me to some friends of mine and brightened up my day. It helped me make it through some lonely nights. Oh, what a friend to have on a cold and lonely night. This old guitar gave me my lovely lady, opened up her eyes and ears to me, brought us close together. I guess it broke her heart, it opened up the space for us to be. What a lovely place, love this space to be. This old guitar gave me my life, my living, all the things you know I love to do, to serenade the stars that shine from the sunny mountains high. Most of all, sing my
great
song to you. I love to sing these songs to you. Yes, I do, you know. I love to sing my songs to you.
And, of course, the song that was recorded in 1966 by John Denver with the title Babe, I Hate to Go. That same year, Denver chose this song along with 15 others and with his own money had 250 copies pressed onto vinyl. He distributed the copies to friends and family. Peter, Paul, and Mary were so impressed with the song that they chose to record it themselves and released it on their 1967 album, 1700. Notably, it didn't become a hit for them until they released it as a single in 1969. The song was also spent, it also spent 3 weeks atop the Easy Listening chart and was used in commercials for United Airlines in the late 1970s. And of course, we're talking about the song that we played earlier in our show, and we'll sign off with this song that John Denver wrote.
But anyway, I like to fly a whole lot, and flying over here, like I said, was fun. And the only aspect of flying that I don't like is when you have to leave somebody that you care for a great deal and leave home and go out on the road. And I wrote a song about that. This was about 6 years ago, I guess. And I'd like to do it for you. It's called Leaving on a Jet Plane.
my bags are packed. I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye, but the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. The taxi's waiting, he's blown the horn. Already I'm so lonesome I could die. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. Every song I sing, I'll sing for you. When I come back, I'll bring your wedding ring. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go.
Good night to all you wonderful people, number one to the sun and the wings of man, Eastern Airlines. Good night.